The Bloody Podcassacre with Zach Walters and Kennedy Catherine.
Welcome back
to the Bloody Podcaster.
That's Zachary Walters.
And that's Kennedy Catherine. Our upload schedule right now, listen, we are busybodies.
It's not for you to know.
But you're still getting it.
And so that's what matters.
You're welcome.
I have news.
Tell me.
I saw Nope last night.
Yep, I do have my notes here.
Okay, let's try to keep it spoiler free.
Mm-hmm. So I went for my birthday, which Kennedy decided to not show up for.
I was working.
No, she texted me. She said, "You're the worst friend I've ever had. Yep. I only wanted to talk to you.
Only on mic."
So I said, "That's fine. I don't need you anyways." So I went and saw Nope 2 weeks ago now. And then you saw it last night.
I did.
You know my thoughts already.
Mm-hmm. Kind of. I mean, you didn't really tell me. I got secondhand knowledge that you just didn't like it is all I've heard.
Yeah, I was very disappointed in it.
I am willing to theorize that part of the reason why I wasn't disappointed is because I knew so many people who were, but I really don't understand why.
Cinematography, great. Tension, great. Directing, good. I didn't love the story, or I could care less about the characters.
I loved them. No, I cared about that family.
See, I didn't. I had nothing that I was caring about them. And I just found like the story boring to me. It felt like they were never truly like in peril, like from my perspective. Nothing bad was ever going to really happen.
Hmm.
And I was just like, I was so just like expecting so much more. And like, yes, I've done research since this movie has come out because there is like hidden meanings.
I don't think the meanings are all that hidden. I assume it's about consumerism.
Yeah. But even then, I felt like it was not the family's story. It was like a secondary character story.
The monkey storyline?
Yeah.
I think it's kind of both, though, because it's trying to capture something. Okay, I'm trying to think of how to say this spoiler free. I don't think that it's any sort of secret that this movie has like an extraterrestrial element. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's sort of just like how we'll reference it going forward. There is the sense of there being this other presence, this other being that is not necessarily for us. It's not something we're supposed to capture. And I think that is the same sort of idea as this show that had the chimpanzee. It's so hard to talk about this without like giving away the plot. But essentially, they're trying to capture the essence of that. And I do think it's sort of a similar idea.
I just didn't enjoy it. And I'm disappointed because I was really, really excited for it.
Mm. Really thought the cinematography was some of the best I have seen in a long time.
There's some really, really cool shots.
Yeah. It was definitely in my more loved films of 2022. Regardless of what your expectation is, it is just a good movie. Okay, I know you're not, but like, what about it, genuinely, outside of the fact that you just like didn't care for the characters, is bad about it?
I didn't like the story either.
Why?
I don't know. I just like, I literally almost fell asleep.
We had such different experiences. I just think
it's so strange.
Yeah, well, I just, yeah, the way that I looked at it was just like, it is inarguably a movie with really fantastic elements. Like,
but that's it.
But a good, I know, I liked the story and I cared about the characters. I cared about the history of their family.
Oh, I didn't.
What?
I just like, it wasn't for me. It's so bizarre.
I don't expect that of you.
I know.
Here's another thing. I fully disagree with any sort of criticism that this is unlike his other movies.
Like, it's slightly different because I think it takes a different tone where it's not like horror in your face.
But neither was Get Out.
Yeah, that's true. But they had like, no, you're right. I was going to say they had like jump scares and stuff, but
this movie had, its own version of jump scares. Okay.
Let's do a flip now. New TikTok movie craze, Incantation. Now available on Netflix.
You turned that one around on me.
Let's change it.
I did not like it.
And I loved it. Mm-hmm. I think it's like one of my favorite horror movies this year. Ugh, there is something about that movie that has... Last night going to bed, I was still freaking out about it.
Here's where we differ, though.
We had such different viewing experiences.
We had such different viewing experiences. And unlike your perception of Nope, I can say that Incantation is probably a great movie. My viewing experience of it was not conducive to being scared.
Right.
There was a moment toward the beginning first see the daughter getting sort of possessed, and we have that very just like classic found footage, like a woman videotaping her in her apartment and spooky little things are happening, and then we come around the door and her daughter is possessed. That's where I was like, oh no, this is gonna be scary. And then I just totally lost the plot and didn't enjoy it very much.
Fair. I think the thing that like really was the part that like stuck with me is there's this whole like literal incantation and like this mindset in the movie that don't think your name, don't look at these symbols that we're showing you, don't look at the face. And I was so terrified. If I look at this, I'm actually going to be possessed. I got home and I literally was like, what are my three favorite things?
What were they?
I don't remember. I wrote them down.
Did you watch the English dub version or just subtitles?
I did watch the English dub just because we were with like a group of people. And you know, you chat over. And so I think I would have struggled a little bit more.
I would recommend if people are interested in watching just to watch. I think it's time.
Yes, I think it is.
Just to watch it in its own language and watch with subtitles, because I don't mind watching dubbed shows. It just can take a second to adjust to. And the authentic voices and the authentic acting is always better.
Yeah, I agree. There was some times where the dub was like spot on. I hate when that happens. Are you speaking English now? Anyways, things I love. I said my cat, music, and my friends.
Did a five-year-old write that list?
Yeah, it was me, terrified.
My first thought was ice cream, to be fair.
Hers was ice cream or something like that, too.
I don't remember.
I really liked how it played out. And I also liked that the reveal at the end wasn't as supernatural as I thought it was going to be.
I did like the reveal at the end. That definitely caught my attention after. The thing for me is it felt really long. It was starting to drag. Yeah. But then the end kind of pulled me back in.
It's a hard film because it's non-linear. You're going back and forth 6 years, I think.
Yes.
And so there's some points where you're like, what time am I in? It does pay off in the end. Wraps it up full circle. The last thing is something we've talked about as an episode, but now a trailer has come out for Pearl, which is the prequel for the X movie. Finally, we've got around to watching it today. It looks so good.
I've never been more excited just to have a fun time.
Yeah, and like the way it was filmed looks like it is like from the 30s. Like there were scenes where you could tell there was like no depth in the camera really. And it was just like a flat image, it almost looked like. Anytime Mia Goth comes onto like a screen, I'm like, there's something eerie about this bitch.
I had seen her in a number of things over the years. Obviously, she's just been around. Never been affected by her. Never thought twice about her. Since X, anytime I've seen her in anything or like watching the trailer for this, I don't know what it is about her. She is affecting. I can't tell you if I'm attracted to her. I can't tell you if I'm scared of her.
Both.
Both, maybe. But I find myself enchanted when she's on screen.
I think if she was to walk into a room, I would scream.
Yeah, no.
I would scream, like, out of terror. What's up?
She's also just, like, a version of a person that, like, tall, thin, sort of, like, ethereal-looking person that if she walked into a room, I'd be like, I simply am not allowed to talk to you.
It's, like, one of those biblically accurate angels. It's actually Mia Goth. I'm going to say it. I think it's going to be better than X.
I think so, too. I've had conversations recently about X, and the most interesting thing about that movie for me is the character of Pearl and sort of trying to break down what is going on here. What are your motivations? What's going on in your brain? So to have her backstory, which is about what I thought it was going to be from what I can tell, but slightly more, slightly less queer, which was maybe wishful thinking on my part. I didn't think she was gay. The envy that she had for the women in X was kind of like towing a few lines. And this movie looks very, I'm willing to kill any woman who gets in my way.
I'm excited. I think that the reason this movie looks so good is because they filmed it in conjunction with X. I think there was not a lot of time between movie sets.
Couldn't have been.
They're still in that mindset where people come back 5, 10, 15 years after because people love it.
Yeah, you're not like trying to recreate magic that you're motivated to do just because an audience is asking for it. Like it's something it's self-serving. You're doing it for you at that point.
So that's why I think it's going to be really good and it's going to be a great prequel. And then I kind of want to go rewatch X after.
I rewatched it the other day.
And was it as enjoyable?
It's definitely a very fun theater experience.
Yeah. Anyways, let's get a roll in. We got a bachelorette this weekend.
We got a bachelorette to get ready for.
Ooh,
last time I went to a bachelorette, got banned from a casino. So here's hoping round two.
Last time I went to a bachelorette, I watched Canada's Drag Race queen play chess and win. So
where did you go?
Some random warehouse.
What are you talking about?
It sounds like a fever dream. It's not, I
it
promise.
It does. I'll believe it when I see it.
Anyways, this week we're talking about Le Telephone Noir.
The Darkest iPhone.
That's probably what it would be called if it was
If modern. They make this in like 40 years, they'll call it The Darkest iPhone.
Or Apple will be like, excuse me. It'll be called The Darkest Smartphone. This is the Black Phone, which came out last year.
2022.
Yeah, this year.
It came out maybe a month ago.
Because it just recently came on video on demand, right?
Okay, it got released in theaters the day that I got back to Canada. So beginning of July or okay. End of June.
I watched it with a couple of friends. Really enjoyed it. It's definitely one of those movies where it was marketed as like a horror, but it was more of like a true crime.
Yeah, I would say it airs very much on the side of like almost a drama too.
Yeah.
And then with some sort of like suspenseful supernatural, a few jump scares. There was one that fucking got me. I don't even remember what it was. It was just like a very quick shot, like a very quick pan to one of the dead kids.
Mm.
It's very broad. I think it was intentionally made to be sort of like appealing to a wide audience.
I kept on like thinking, watching the movie, but then I realized after, it's very reminiscent of Prisoners with Jake Gyllenhaal and Hugh Jackman.
I swear to God you said that about a movie like a week ago.
But it is very similar, but just with like a ghost sprinkled into it.
Okay.
This is the same movie, but if you want to add ghosts, this is the one. Mm-hmm. No ghosts, go to Prisoners. I really liked it. But then after I sat on it, I couldn't remember this movie.
I sort of had a similar experience. The viewing experience was really fun. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it.
I couldn't tell you what happened.
I can tell you what happened because I wrote the synopsis and I'm about to read it. And so I read it before I came. But it's not a hard-hitting, impactful film, I'll tell you that.
No, and there's not a lot of scenes where you're like, ah, remember that? That like leads to the next thing. I was like,
2 seconds ago, I said I had one huge jump scare. Couldn't tell you what it is.
Yeah, I'm going to need you to do a little...
Let's do a refresher.
That would be nice. Thank you.
So in 1978, a serial child abductor known as the Grabber prowls the streets of Denver.
Grabber? I hardly know her.
Living in the area with their abusive alcoholic father are siblings Finney and Gwen. At school, Finney is often bullied, only defended by his tough schoolmate Robin. At another school, a boy named Bruce is abducted. Gwen has a psychic dream of the kidnapping, seeing him being taken by a man in a black van with black balloons. Police interview Gwen, but struggle to believe her. A few days later, Robin and then Finney are also abducted. Finney awakens alone in a soundproof basement. A disconnected black rotary phone sits on the wall broken, but later it rings. On the other end is Bruce, unable to remember his name or who he was when he was still alive. He tells Finney about a floor tile he can remove to dig a tunnel to escape. The Grabber brings him food and leaves the door to the basement unlocked. As Finney prepares to sneak out, the phone rings, and a boy called Billy explains that this is a game the Grabber plays. He'll be waiting upstairs to attack with a belt if he leaves the basement. Detectives survey the suburb and speak with an eccentric man called Max. He's developed an interest in the abductions while staying at his brother's place in the area. Eventually, it's revealed to the audience that Max is the Grabber's brother, completely unaware of what's going on in the basement beneath him. Finney speaks to another victim, Griffin, on the phone, who shows him a combination to a lock and tells him the Grabber has fallen asleep upstairs. He sneaks upstairs and unlocks the door, but the Grabber's dog awakens as he attempts to flee down the street, leading to his recapturing. Devastated over his failed escape, Finney answers the phone to hear another victim, a kid called Vance. Vance tells him of a connecting storage room he can escape through if he breaks a hole in the wall and exits through the freezer door on the other side. He creates the hole with a toilet tank cover and enters the back of the freezer, only to discover that the door is locked. The phone rings one more time with Robin on the other end. He comforts Finney, encouraging him to finally stand up and fight for himself. A dream leads Gwen to discover the property of the Grabber, allowing her to notify police. At the same time, Max, the Grabber's brother, realizes that someone is being held in the basement and rushes to free him, only to be hit over the head with an axe by his own brother. The police rush to the house but find it abandoned aside from the buried bodies of the victims in the basement. The Grabber attacks Finney, but he manages to trip him with the phone cord, causing him to fall into the tunnel he dug, breaking his ankle. The ghosts taunt the Grabber over the phone before Finney strangles him with the phone cord. He then distracts the guard dog with meat from the freezer and escapes. He exits the house across the street from the grave sites, where he reunites with his sister and police rush to the property. The siblings comfort each other as their father arrives, falling to his knees with apologies. Back at school a while later, a confident Finney sits next to his crush in class. Did you find that ending to be just like...
so out of left field.
Right?
Cool, you murdered a man and now you can go sit next to a girl in science class?
A bunch of your peers were murdered and you're like, guess what? I'm feeling kind of cool.
Guess what? I did the escape room alone. Oh. It literally is an escape room movie. Hearing this over, he had to just figure out the puzzle pieces.
Once again, really loved this movie in the moment. And afterward, I just feel largely unaffected by it.
It's a good watch, don't get me wrong. Yeah. I would recommend it to people if they want to, like, kind of a mindless movie to watch.
Right. I think that the supernatural element actually takes away from the horror in a weird way. It really reminds me of Sinister. So, like, mm-hmm. the mediumship storyline was good, but I think to have made this film truly terrifying, it would have had to lack those elements of supernaturalness because the dead kids and the jump scares, it gives that popcorn horror feeling and it creates that broad appeal. But I think this story easily could have been made very dark and very intense and interesting if the focus had been solely on the true crime aspect. What I was thinking is, like, if the sister had visions or dreams or, like, intuitions that led her to a certain spot or, like, to make certain assumptions to get us to that final point, that could have been cool. But it was the aspect of, like, the dead kids mm-hmm. is what felt very sinister, which, like, those dead kids in the attic, which I found when I rewatched some of those movies and, like, a few other Blumhouse movies, that's the one aspect of them that actually doesn't age well. Mm-hmm. The storylines are terrifying, but that... like visual, the CGI and all of that, it just never ages well.
Yeah. I kind of broke my notes down into what I think worked and what didn't work.
Okay.
So the things that I thought worked well was I really liked the like 70s vibe, the whodunit. Mm-hmm. And it kind of reminded me a lot of like the first half before Finney was captured reminded me of Halloween, like the original Halloween.
Where
it was
that.
Like there was some sort of like person terrorizing people. It's a lot of like open spaces for some reason.
70s neighborhood vibe. Yeah. Kids just running around, walking around, bikes. No one's getting picked up by their mom in a minivan.
I really thought that the Grabber was going to play more of a pivotal role in this movie. Mm-hmm. He's pretty like a step removed almost, even though he is the antagonist in this movie. Like, from the trailers and the marketing and everything, you would think that he was, one, going to steal so many more children throughout the movie. And I thought he was going to terrorize the community more than he did. Mm-hmm. It just, like, panned out differently. But I really thought he was going to be, like, maybe take one of their arms. Maybe, like, starve them. Maybe, you know, like, it just felt so mundane in what he was doing. Oh, he's kind of lame. Even though he did kill five other children.
It's just so much implication.
Yeah.
So the only thing that we see is them in the quote unquote afterlife through these sort of visions.
Yeah.
And so that's how we see them in their worst form. But we don't see what's happening to them. The mm-hmm. most horrific thing, quite honestly, that happens in that movie is the father beating the daughter.
That scene.
Horrible.
It was. When I was watching that movie. It was like that acting in that whole scene was so good. First off, the screams and like the pleading and like her crying felt so real. And it was like so unsettling because it was so prolonged.
Mm-hmm.
And like just Finney standing there being like, Dad, please stop. It is just like this horrific, brutal chaos.
Horrific, brutal chaos is the best way to put it. It's really, truly upsetting.
And the fact that the father at the end is like, I'm so sorry. I was like, you can die.
You can rot.
He was the worst.
I've read a couple of theories that the Grabber is sort of like a mental or emotional manifestation of the domestic violence these kids are experiencing. I don't buy into that as like an overall theory because mm-hmm. he is definitely like an independent entity that has been terrorizing this community. It's not like a mental manifestation.
Yeah.
But I can see how they're sort of drawing this parallel that these kids are put in like an incredibly powerless position against these people until they in some way find the upper hand. So he kills the Grabber and then he's sort of exonerated of his feelings for his father.
It's weird though because like knowing that it was a short story originally by Joe Hill.
Which I have not read.
I haven't either. But I just feel like that's not something that would be panned out. You know, like that kind of storyline.
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
I've heard from a couple of people that he's not that interesting of a writer.
Like father, like son.
Oh, how dare you?
I'm kidding. The only like work that I know of his outside of this was Dr. Sleep.
Didn't like it.
Because he co-wrote that.
Wait, is Dr. Sleep
the Shining sequel?
Yeah, didn't like it. That's I don't actually know if he did or not. I'm not saying he didn't. I just don't know.
Yeah, I want to say that they wrote it together.
Nepotism. Love to see it.
I also saw a photo of him and not what I was expecting him to look like.
I'm going
to
look him up.
Yeah. Do a little quick Google search.
That seems about right to me.
I saw one of him like sitting in an alley.
He looks like his dad.
Sometimes I think that Stephen King in my mind is Jay Leno. I don't know why.
No, not at all.
No, not Jay Leno.
Another late night host?
Yeah.
David Letterman?
I don't know. Anyways, another thing that I really liked in this movie, actually, even though it wasn't prevalent, was Ethan Hawke. Mm-hmm. I thought he was great in this role. Like, even him just sitting in the chair or sleeping, he was terrifying. I saw an article where he said he was initially hesitant on playing this character because he didn't want to be remembered for a scary performance for the rest of his career. But then he realized he's in his 50s and he does not care.
Good for him. Also, you're going to be remembered for like tens of other things, depending on your audience. It doesn't matter.
I was like, also, Ethan Hawke, you were in a lot of other scary movies.
Also, Ethan Hawke, you're Ethan Hawke.
Yeah.
People know who you are.
Also, you have now famous child.
What? Who's his child?
Maya Hawke.
I don't know who that is.
Maya Hawke, she's in Stranger Things. She also has an album coming out.
Oh, good for them.
I'll show you a picture.
In my head, he's married to Julie Delpy before midnight or before sunset or before sunrise for anybody. I also watched an interview with him that I thought was interesting because this character, like you said, turns out to be more insignificant to the whole story than you would think. Mm-hmm. Just in terms of like actual substance to the plot, they don't give us any of his story.
No.
But I think that was intentional. And he was talking about, I really enjoyed this actually. He said, I could have theories about why he's broken, but it doesn't matter because he's already broken and he's using that to hurt people.
Mm.
So I kind of like that because yeah. I feel like there's sort of like a constant conversation around this person is like this because this happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just saying, yeah, it doesn't fucking matter because the end result is this thing and the victims matter more
mm-hmm.
than my story. He also does not know what the method for the masks were.
I was literally just going to say.
Was not worth.
What was the mask's purpose?
Okay, so the mask's purpose is different than what I was saying. I've read a couple of different theories about this, but one of them is essentially that he came from like an intense background of abuse and then he became the perpetrator of abuse. And so now he's trying to reconcile the two sort of people that lives within him, you know, the innocent child and then the guilty person. And the mask is his way of removing himself from what he's doing. So the mask, you know, you put on the mask and you're like Batman, you become a separate mm-hmm. entity from yourself.
Okay.
But there was like a whole formula to why he wore certain masks at certain times. And they never told him what the rationale was.
Yeah, because it was like, at one point, it was just like his eyes were covered. One point, it was just his mouth. Mm-hmm. We had a full face.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very odd. I did like them. They were very cool.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish that we knew something more of that.
I also read a theory that basically he was a medium.
Okay.
And that he grew up sort of with the same abilities, I guess you would say. He, as a child, felt something wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
And his parents locked him away and did to him what he was doing to
all the other kids.
Yeah. That would lend to why he can hear the phone. Because mm-hmm. the phone is not an actual workable phone. It's yeah. how Finney is communicating with children from the other side. Okay, my phone. Okay, still recording. I wonder if everybody could hear that. So sorry if you could. Anyway, that would make sense as to why he could hear the phone.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to switch now to the things that I think didn't work. I said this earlier. I don't know if I did, but I think the kidnapping part took way too long. I felt like we were like watching these kids' lives and I was like, I do not care about these kids. However, I did love Finney's sister, Gwen.
Loved her.
She had some of the best lines in this whole movie when she was praying to Jesus and she was swearing. I was like, you get it.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that she had this supernatural ability that was so blatantly exposed,
mm-hmm.
it kind of annoyed me a little bit because at first, the cops came to her and they were like, you know what I love? Sorry, quick side note. We were both like, I have no recollection of this movie. But then we're like, we'll proceed to talk about it for 45 minutes. The cops came to talk to her because she said she had a dream about where these other kids had gone. And they were like, stop your lying with your bullshit. If you say one more thing about these dreams, we're going to shoot you. They didn't actually say that.
I don't remember that.
But then at the end, they were like, ah, yes. Sorry, we were mad at you. Please come, Jean Grey. We will fix you. Not fix you, but use your powers for good.
Jean Grey.
Jean Grey, she's the telepathic from the X-Men. But they were like fully supporting her. And they were like, yes, tell us your dreams. Mm. We believe you now. And I was like, where did this switch happen?
I think they probably were just desperate.
Because they did nothing. The cops did absolutely nothing in this
movie. ACAB for life.
I did see online that somebody said that Finny, Gwen, the Grabber, and the mother of Finny and Gwen all have the shine from Stephen King's novel.
Yeah. Oh, that would make sense because all of his novels are connected. Mm-hmm. He didn't write this, but presumably it could be in the same universe.
Yeah. Because like you were saying, the Grabber can hear the phone. Mm-hmm. Finny can. Gwen has something. The mother committed suicide because...
she thought she was schizophrenic.
Yeah.
We don't actually know that she thought she was schizophrenic. I'm saying that that was what they like... alluded to, was that she couldn't deal with these voices. And I think her husband basically gaslit and abused her into doubting her perception of reality.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So I do personally believe that all of them have some sort of ability and that it's not just Gwen, but Gwen is the most vocal. I did a little bit of digging because I wanted to know kind of what was different from the short story versus the movie. And so neither of us have read it, but there's some interesting, like some of them are like, oh, the killing was, there was only five kids killed, not six, or like he wasn't the sixth. In the short though, the Grabber was a plus-sized man named Al who would drop his groceries on the street in order for the kids to get lured in to be like, oh, let me help you. And then he would spray them and throw them in the back of the van.
I mean, the Grabber did that.
He was a magician. They could have made him a grocery man for my sake.
You're right.
I do not need magic in my life.
We immediately, the second that that started happening, me and my roommate were both like, oh, it's Zach's worst nightmare.
Yeah.
You would have never been duped by that motherfucker.
No, I would have said, I'm going to go. My dad's calling. I can hear him. Gotta go. I don't like magic.
Got a jet.
But apparently the encounter in the short story was a lot more violent compared to the movie. Just like with the descriptions. Instead of just being lured in by a fake magician, because all magicians are fake. Another thing that is kind of different is that in the short story, Finny only talks to Bruce.
Mm. Is there more victims still?
Well, like in the movie, yes. Yep. There still is all the other victims, but he only talks to Bruce. He's the only one who kind of like tells him like, use the phone as the weapon. Whereas in the movie, obviously we get it from every kid and like where they kind of failed and moved along. Gwen in the short story was only good at guessing things like cards. She didn't like have a connection to the victims. In the short story, the mom doesn't die, just that the mom left their dad due to being frustrated with the marriage, which interesting. This is the part that I was thinking about earlier, is that in the short story, the Grabber starved the kids as a merciful way of killing them. He felt it was less cumbersome of a method of death, but then the murder was actually the game of Naughty Boy. Where they, if they had tried to escape, then they would die.
So the Naughty Boy game is the movie.
Yeah.
In the story, he just starves them to death.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's a horrible fucking way to die. Starving would be horribly painful.
Yeah.
Like, rather than just, listen, take me out. I'm not going to know after.
Like, axe me to the head. Speaking of being axed to the head, the brother was, like, not really, like, notable in the short story. He kind of, like, comes down and finds Finny, and then Al does still axe him in the head. But in the movie, they, like, gave him a character name, gave him, like, a whole story, being like...
he's a coke addict
right
who
under
loves
my nose.
Coke addict, literally.
Oh!
An amped-up boy who just loves a mystery.
True. Me. In the short story, Finny only had cement pebbles on the ground, which he didn't use, and then eventually the black phone. However, in the movie, it's so wild because he has his little spaceship rocket, which is also like a blade. Then he has the toilet lid, which I'm like, that is a great weapon. Why are we wasting it away?
Also, you don't think the Grabber would have thought of that? A detachable piece of porcelain?
I was going to say cement, but it's not cement.
Yeah, a detachable piece of porcelain. And this guy's not going to be like, probably
an issue.
Yeah, liability. Gonna take that out.
Yeah, a bucket maybe.
You could even just take it off the top of the tank.
No. Why do you need a toilet? They're not eating.
He fed them in the movie.
Soda. Which is not bad. I would take it. Soda and crackers. Soda crackers. In the short story, it ends with Finney giving the grabber the phone to let Bruce taunt him, in which kind of happens in the movie. But it doesn't end with Finney running out, finding his sister, and all of that. Like, to have a wrap-up, it kind of just ends. Mm. Those are, like,
The main differences
that are between them, which makes me kind of want to read it more. Because mm-hmm. I don't think it's that long of a story. As for fun facts about this movie, there's not much. Since it's pretty new, a lot of it that I've just seen is continuity errors. Like different numbers on police cars when they get in and out of it.
Oh, okay.
There's a palm tree in the front yard, which is like, how in Denver do you have a palm tree? There's one scene where Finney breaks down crying and his hair is soaked from sweating. And then later he's on the phone and his hair is dry.
And that's it? That's all?
That's all I got.
Thanks for your contributions.
You're so welcome.
In my research, I was thinking about how Scott Derrickson, the director, the movies are not similar, really. Like, he made Exorcism of Emily Rose, Sinister, Deliver Us from Evil. But I was thinking there seems to be some sort of common thread there.
Which was Deliver Us from Evil?
The one with...
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the one with the cop.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So I was thinking, there seems to be this type of movie that he makes where there is some sort of looming evil. So I Googled it, and as it turns out, he is a Christian man. And this is, I read a whole article about it that was kind of hard for me to swallow. But listen, I'm not here to make statements about religion. I'm just here to report facts. So Scott found his faith truly blossomed when he was away at university, but I believe he was raised Christian. He went to a Christian institution for school, and he found himself, quote unquote, exposed to a world of ideas while wrestling with weighty theological and philosophical issues, such as the problem of evil, the conundrum of suffering, and the intricacies of the human condition. I struggle with my own doubts, he said, but Christianity still holds up under all scrutiny. Does it?
No.
Questionable statement at best. I would have
a bold statement.
I would have a couple of things to say about that.
Just one.
But he said that that's where he came to peace with this reality of evil, with the state of the fallen world, and that despite all of that, he believed in the sovereignty of God. So I think that's kind of interesting, because when you think about it, in most of these movies, goodness does prevail over evil.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just like looking through his like filmography right now. He also did Hellraiser Inferno, Labyrinth 2, and then he also did Doctor Strange. Because I was looking just like at his, while researching the movie, he dropped out of doing Doctor Strange 2 to do, well, because of differences with the creative direction that they were going for the movie. He did the first one, the second one wasn't the same, so then he picked up on the black phone.
Okay.
So then he started working on this movie. I think it was in 2019, early 2020. Mm-hmm. So that's like all I know about him. But according to Letterboxd, I've seen 35% of his films.
Wow.
5 out of 14. That's pretty high. He also did another Stephen King one called The Breathing Method. Oh, it's an upcoming adaptation of a Stephen King novella.
I was going to say, I don't think I've ever even heard of that. Well, part of the reason that he wanted to make this
Jason
film.
Jason Blum is the producer.
Of course he is. Is Ethan Hawke in this one too?
No, it doesn't say a cast yet, but. Probably.
I mean, we should all just say Jason Blum is Ethan Hawke is Jason Blum's kid's godfather. That's how he keeps ending up in his movies. They're best friends.
Jason Blum really loves to have his fingers in everything at all times, I feel.
Did you notice that the Blumhouse Productions intro like logo was different this time? It kind of like walked you through a house that had homages to all of his films. It was actually pretty neat.
No. I'm going to have to go back and look.
Okay, well, I was going to say before, too, that Scott Derrickson, he saw this film as a chance to confront the darker parts of his own youth and the unsettling atmosphere that clung to his own hometown. It was my attempt to capture the feeling of my own childhood, he said. I grew up in a working class neighborhood that was quite violent. There was a lot of fighting, bullying, animal violence. Kids were bleeding all the time. It was also the era of Ted Bundy sweeping through Colorado. The Manson murders had just occurred, and one day, his 8-year-old neighbor came pounding on their door, sobbing, saying, "Someone murdered my mom." His mother had been kidnapped, raped, and murdered.
Jesus.
Yeah, that's part of the reason why he made this. Is that not just one of the most horrifying things you could experience as a child?
I don't even know what I would, where I would be right now.
Obviously, that happening to a child, you know, that happens to your own mother would just put a black spot on the rest of your existence for the rest of your life. Having that happen, like, in your network of people, your neighbor comes over and you're a kid, and you suddenly shatter, like, your entire perception of safety and, like, community. Yeah. That would be a formative experience. Yeah.
Jesus.
That'd be fucking wild. Want to end on that note?
Yeah, I have nothing else to add.
I think overall, it is a movie that was made for a large audience. It was good. It was enjoyable. I don't know that I need to watch it again. Do you want to rate it?
Yeah.
Scary.
2.
I'm going to go with like a 5. I jumped a couple times. Maybe like a 4. 5 maybe is generous.
I'm giving it 2 because 1, the axe really got me.
That was good.
That was a good scene.
There was a couple of like quick pans to dead kids that made me spooked.
That was my other vote, was for you.
Thank you for taking my feelings into consideration.
You're welcome.
Unsettling.
Like a 3.
I can go with a 3 myself. That night I went to the bathroom, as is my common experience after watching horror movies, and when I came back, I felt a little unsettled.
Name one time that you don't.
Almost never. Story.
Like a 6. I was like enthralled by it. I wanted to know what was going to happen.
Yeah, I'm going to go 5. I don't know. It didn't require anything else necessarily, but having some more substance to the grabber probably would have felt good as a viewer.
I also think if it moved just slightly faster, it would have been a little higher.
What was the runtime on those?
Like an hour and 15, hour 20 probably.
It wasn't an hour and 15. Yeah, you pulled that out of your ass. I did.
But it felt like an hour 42.
Yeah, I was like, an hour and 15 would be a short fucking movie. And you're over here being like, wrap it up. All right. Was it a paper cut or was it a bloody massacre?
It's probably a paper cut for me.
Yeah, not in a bad way.
No.
But it, for sure.
I you can notice that. It. But then guess what? It starts to heal and it's just like that weird white skin flap and you're like, oh yeah, I got a paper cut.
Mm-hmm. You accidentally get a little lemon juice in it one day, but...
Like, oh, I remember.
That's about it.
That's this movie. It's a good analogy. Great work, team. Have you always had that?
Had what? That tattoo?
Yes, I've seen it multiple times. Thank you.
Yeah, I've had it for about 7 years. I've also had 3 removal processes done on it about 5 years ago and then just never went back. So if you're like, wow, that looks faded, it is.
Is it a Lord of the Rings tattoo?
It is not.
Okay.
It is.
Just wanted to check
in. Nordic symbols that mean creativity, wisdom, and energy. We don't need to talk about it. We don't need to talk about it. Anyway, you can find us at Podcasticker on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. You can send us an email at thebloodypodcasticker. We should have told you at the top of this episode to leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, but we forgot. So go do that now or I'll find you and I will grab you. Hold on.
Nope.
Consensually or not at all. That's the only option.
Yeah.
I gotta go. Okay. Until next time.
Never talk to strangers. Ew.
I wouldn't. I'm antisocial at best.